Thank you. We're joined as usual by Scott McKay, political analyst for the Publix Radio. Hi there, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning to you.
Good morning, all.
And we're pleased to welcome back as our guest, state director for the progressive advocacy group Rhode Island Working Families, Georgia Hollister Isman. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Georgia, let's start with the 2019 General Assembly session. What do you consider the top priorities for the progressive movement?
At Working Families, we always are working to make the priorities of working men and women at the top of the agenda in the legislature. So for us, that means we're going to be working on the fair pay bill we worked on last session for equal pay for women, raising the minimum wage substantially. And I also think this is a year where we have a real chance of passing legislation around a woman's right to choose.
And how do you see the outlook for these bills? Some of these did not move forward last year. Why would it be any different this time around?
Yeah, well, the intervening thing that happened was the 2018 elections. And you saw all across the state candidates who were strongly in support of those kinds of issues and talking about them actively on the campaign trail win re-election, sometimes against candidates who were strongly supported by the more conservative Democratic establishment.
Maureen, how do you see the outlook for these kind of progressive goals in the new legislative session after some of these measures have faced an uphill battle in the past?
I'm really optimistic, especially those things that deal with economic issues and that deal with working people. We all know the Democratic Party has lost sort of credibility nationwide. And I think even conservative legislators would be willing to go and support these kind of activities. So I think it's good for that. As far as some of the other, the Roe v. Wade, that's going to be a tough sell. But Speaker Mattiello was in here. It seems like he's likely to support some of these issues that have to do with women's issues. And hopefully he'll do it early on.
Scott, we've seen how the progressive caucus in the House in particular has waxed and waned over the years. It's stronger right now. What difference do you expect that to make?
I think if you look at things that aren't going to cost a lot of money, for instance, codifying Roe v. Wade, it's a huge divisive issue, I understand, but it's not going to cost any state money. I think some things like that that don't make the state raise taxes would be very good places to go. The other thing I'm interested in Georgia is, you know, there's this myth out there that Rhode Island is some kind of magnet for social welfare programs, but realistically, you look around New England, we're very low on some of these measures. For instance, how come we can't get behind raising the earned income tax credit?
We should. It's lower than it is in other states. And I think if we're thinking about ways to boost lower wage workers and make sure that folks who work hard in Rhode Island can take care of their families, you want to look at a couple of things. One of them is raising the minimum wage, and we're falling further and further behind Massachusetts. And the other one is raising the earned income tax credit. Those work hand in hand.
Well, in related news, we see how House Speaker Nicholas Mattiello has the votes to retain his powerful leadership post. That will be decided during a formal vote in January. But 21 House Democrats did vote against Mattiello during a recent Democratic caucus. Georgia, how do you think these Democratic dissidents can leverage their power in the upcoming House session?
I do think we're headed for a really interesting House session. I think it's a very different dynamic than we've seen before, with people being willing to be outspoken about their demands. And we heard this loud and clear on the campaign trail. I think this is one of the key takeaways from this election cycle for me, is voters, they want to see progress on these economic justice issues. They also want to see progress on some of the small D Democratic stuff inside the legislature. They are paying attention to how the House and the Senate are run, and they want to see reform there.
Well, let's move on and talk a little bit about how we're edging closer to the 2020 presidential race. There's a lot of debate among Democrats about whether a centrist or more progressive candidate would give the party a better chance of retaking the White House. What do you say, Maureen?
I say that I think a centrist Democrat, particularly not from the coast, is a good option. I'm not supporting this person, but there's a recently reelected Senator, Sherrod Brown from Ohio. He argues that you have to look at issues through the prism of the working class. I think that goes a long way towards bringing people together. The other thing is, his agenda beyond that is pretty liberal in terms of a lot of progressive liberal issues. But he says we're looking at everything through the prism of the working class. And he's from the Midwest. And I think someone like him is a good prospect.
Georgia, we saw back in 2004 how Republicans made John Kerry, a combat veteran of Vietnam, into some kind of effete French-esque liberal, and George W. Bush won that election. I imagine you would like to see a more progressive candidate represent Democrats for president. What do you say to the view that that person might face a tougher battle to retake the White House?
I don't really think it's about progressive versus conservative. I actually think voters do really want someone who's putting out there a bold agenda and that they can tell the difference between the candidates. And Sherrod Brown is actually a great example. I don't actually think of him as a moderate. I don't think people do. He is someone who can very authentically talk about the work that he's done with and for working class families, black, brown, and white, in Ohio. So I think we do need someone who can authentically speak to those concerns. But I actually think there's no reason to believe that person ought to be a moderate. I think someone with a bolder vision may actually do better.
Scott, would Bernie Sanders have beaten Donald Trump in the last election?
That's hard to tell. That's one of those hypothetical questions that you just really can't answer. I will say that on the left, all these people can't run or they're going to cannibalize each other. You can't have a race with Brown, Senator Warren, Senator Harris, Senator Sanders, you know, Senator Booker. Looking at these liberals, they'll just beat each other up and you'll end up with a centrist. The one thing I think the Democrats have to understand is that the path back to the White House is going to run through the Great Lakes states. And I think we saw that in the midterms also. They have to get back places like Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, and you have to win Pennsylvania. Ohio is looking increasingly red.
Well, it's Thanksgiving week, so we're going to talk about the stories for which we were most thankful in 2018, as well as some of our top turkeys of the year. I was thankful for the story of the Johnston turkey. It kept eluding Mayor Polisena, kind of a nice Rodan folktale. Meanwhile, my top turkey was former State Senator James Doyle. We're sympathetic to his issues with substance abuse, but he also engaged in some financial chicanery and just kind of reinforced negative views of the General Assembly. Give us your choices, Maureen.
Oh, well, my choice is my turkey of the year is a collective vote for the Providence City Council. I want to be clear and say there are a lot of dedicated, smart people that are on that board or that council. And there's a new mix coming into play. But for 2018, they collectively get a turkey. As far as this story that I'm grateful for, actually, I'm grateful for a non-story around election in Rhode Island. Given the machinations that went on in several states, we have a relatively competent system, starting with Jim Langevin, who put in the paper ballots that, you know, that we have for records. And increasingly, the Secretary of States have done things to make this a viable system.
How about you, Georgia?
So I think the top turkey of the year, and turkey is a bad thing in a couple different ways, but I think one of the stories that seemed the silliest to me was the Democratic Party endorsing more conservative candidates against some really terrific female incumbent legislators this year, and folks running in open seats and then needing to reverse that and rescind endorsements for a Trump supporter and somebody who'd been convicted of drunk driving. So that's definitely a turkey. What I'm grateful for is sort of the flip side of the same thing. Really wonderful crop of new candidates this year, particularly women stepping up to run for the first time and almost all of them winning their seats. So I'm grateful for that new class of legislators.
What I'm really thankful for is an end to this demonizing of these people, calling them a caravan, these toddlers and women coming here. The turkey, it doesn't get any better than Joe Trillo.
All right. On that note, happy Thanksgiving to all our listeners. And we're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. You can find a lot more online at thepublicsradio.org. I'm Ian Donis, and thanks to our panel.